Good afternoon, members. I will call the first meeting of the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development to order. And we are sorry we're starting a little bit late. It certainly is our intent to start on time. The Vice Chair, Senator Telfer, and I actually have the Revenue Committee meeting right next door to this, so we're going to be running from one room to the next. We're also going to make a change in the order of our agenda today because our informational hearing witness does have to go to a meeting with somebody in on the other side of the building, somebody highly placed on the other side of the building.
What? Higher than the Senate?
I didn't say higher than the Senate. Just said highly placed. So we're going to take the informational meeting presentation first, and then we'll go back and pick up our adoption of the rules and introduction of members, if that's okay with everybody. Okay, so let me open an informational hearing and call forward Graham Slater. Graham is the administrator of the Workforce and Economic Research Department of the Employment Department, and we're hoping that he will tell us some not-so-good news and then some very interesting news about future job opportunities. So sort of the employment numbers from yesterday, a little more amplification on that, and then about an exciting new study that the department has just completed. So please go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee.
Thanks.
So for the record again, my name is Graham Slater, Research Administrator with the Oregon Employment Department. Just to give you a little background why I'm here today, pretty much all of the economic and employment-related information you hear about Oregon's economy, things like yesterday's unemployment rate and what's going on in different industries, manufacturing and construction and healthcare and those things, the wages paid, the projections that students use to figure out their careers or colleges use to plan the programs of training, I mean, all that stuff and much more either comes from or originates with our division in the Employment Department. And that information, of course, is shared with many others, including, of interest to you, Tom Potowski, because it's one of the inputs to the forecast that a lot of your budgeting is based on. So the information gets used in a lot of different places. As you can imagine, it's a very busy time for us. On top of all the regular workload, there is the recession, and I was just on a national conference call at noon today, and all my counterparts are just saying, nobody cares about our numbers when everything's going fine. Now everybody cares about our numbers, the unemployment trends, and so on. So we're busy, and it's great, because we think our numbers can be useful to all of you. So as was mentioned today, I'm going to share a little bit about the current economic situation, and then we'll kind of transition into some of the more long-term issues, which aren't being talked about much these days. Everybody was worried about baby boomers and, you know, do we have enough skilled workers for the future? When I give speeches right now, people don't ask much about that. It's more, let's get through the recession, and then we'll think about that. But we probably need to do both. We need to be also thinking about the long term. So we'll kind of step through slide by slide. You have the handouts if you want to take notes. And obviously, you're very free to interrupt if you choose to, if you have questions. We'll go in a lot more detail on these numbers in subsequent slides. But basically, yesterday's unemployment rate news release, something we do every month, you probably heard about it. The unemployment rate went up to 9%, the highest it's been in a long time, and a very big month-to-month increase. We often tell people that you shouldn't get too excited if the unemployment rate goes up by 2 or 3 tenths in a given month. It's just not that accurate a statistical indicator. But we tell people if it goes up 2 or 3 months by 3 or 4 tenths, then you can kind of start paying attention. And now it's been going up 5, 6, 7 months, sometimes by as much yesterday as a whole percent. I mean, that's very significant, and I'll share some graphs on that. The non-farm payroll employment, which is the primary number that we provide to Tom Potowski, so that really impacts his forecast, that was down by almost 10,000 jobs, and these numbers are all for December, so they're very recent, and they just released yesterday, and that non-farm payroll employment down about 47,000 since earlier last year when we hit our pre-recession peak, and graphically I'll show you a lot more information on these. I'm going to keep moving quickly unless you interrupt, just so that I don't bore you. because I love these numbers, right? Unemployment rates, again, jumped dramatically. We are significantly above the U.S. rate right now, which is pretty true in most of Oregon's history for a number of reasons, but there was a phase there where we were about level, and you can see that's changed a lot. We certainly have been hit hard in this recession. We were hit later than some parts of the U.S., but now that it's caught up with us, again, these last few months of 2008 have been dramatically worse for us. So our rate right now around 9%, but some of you probably were around in Oregon in the early 80s. Maybe you were in the workforce, maybe you were in policymaking roles, I don't know. But you can see the 9% of December 2008 compares with a 12.1% way back in November 1982. So that kind of just gives you that perspective. This is really pretty bad. It's the worst we've seen in a very long time. But if you were around in that early 1980s period, it was significantly worse than where we are today. And I'll show you a couple more numbers on that. I would also add that that doesn't mean that we won't get there. I was giving a speech a couple weeks ago with another economist from the University of Oregon, and he made the very good point, we're only a certain distance into this recession. It's not over yet. So even though I'm sitting here today saying this is not as bad as it was in 1982 or 83, we could get there if things don't turn around. If we continue losing jobs at the rate we are, if the unemployment rate obviously keeps notching up, even at slower than the pace of yesterday, we would pretty soon be into double digits. So nobody's saying we won't get there. We hope we don't. But as of right now, it was significantly worse back in the early 80s. And one particular number I'll give you kind of points that out. The unemployment rate is kind of the interesting front page of the newspaper headline number, but there's a lot of numbers behind that. And one of them is how many unemployed are there? How many actual people who are out there looking for jobs? This goes beyond just those claiming unemployment insurance. This is anybody who's unemployed, whether or not they get or claimed or qualified for unemployment insurance. So our surveys go beyond just the UI program. And on a seasonally adjusted basis, seasonally adjusted means we take out all the Christmas hiring and the school holidays. We take all that out of the numbers. And on a seasonally adjusted basis, you can see about 179,000 unemployed as of this last month. And that's a record number for Oregon. Now, being a record isn't quite as bad as it sounds because obviously 10, 20, 30 years ago, there were a lot fewer people in Oregon and a lot fewer people in the labor force. So you'd expect us to be getting pretty close to record numbers given that there's so many more people here than there were in the 80s and our unemployment rate is high.
So just to ask a question on that, does that mean...
Senator Manchin,
I'm sorry, I'm just...
Please go ahead.
Yes, Chair?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Now I've probably forgotten my question. Is our unemployment based on population? Those figures that you gave us before, the percentage of unemployed is what you first gave us then.
Okay, yeah, Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Mona Sanderson, the unemployment rate is the percent of the labor force
that is not
employed and looking for work, okay? So as that labor force is so much bigger, you know, a 10% unemployment rate now would be a lot more people than a 10% unemployment rate 20 years ago.
Madam Chair.
Looks like we have lots of questions. Yes, go ahead, Senator George.
Just to follow up on my question, so because I'm not familiar with how these numbers are calculated, so is the unemployment number based off of the number of people who file unemployment, or is there a survey done of people and to find out how many people say they're unemployed?
Okay, Chair.
So which one, how is that number developed?
Chair Rosenbaum and Senator George, a little bit of both, actually. There's three main inputs to the unemployment rate. One is our own employment numbers, which will be the next few slides. So that's how many people are on the employment side. On the unemployment side, there is a national survey called the Current Population Survey. And it's a smallish sample, you know, in the high hundreds of people or households in Oregon. But that does give us some numbers that we can use to estimate the Oregon unemployment rate. And we also, one of the inputs is the unemployment insurance claims. So, I mean, so there's a really good number for Oregon because if someone's claiming, clearly they think they're unemployed and they probably would agree, right? But that doesn't capture everybody. At any given time, I think the last number I saw, about 60% of all of the people that I count as unemployed statistically were actually receiving unemployment insurance benefits. So there is quite a difference, and it varies depending on the state of the economy.
Okay. And Vice Chair Telfer.
So clarification of Senator George's question. So somebody's self-employed or a partner not capable of claiming and filing and claiming unemployment compensation. So we're using national statistics to estimate those in the state of Oregon.
Senator Rosenbaum and Senator Telfer, we're actually using Oregon data from a national survey to estimate those.
Okay. Got it.
So it is it's Oregon specific.
Okay.
And members, I think we'll try to hold questions till the presentation's over, and then I think there will be time for questions at the end. We just don't want to run out of time for the good news part of the story.
That's true.
I did want to just clarify, though, the 60% of people that you said were collecting benefits, you said 60% of the unemployed are on UI, and then the 40% would be people who either didn't qualify or have exhausted their benefits?
Those are two examples.
Thank you.
Chair, yeah.
Please go ahead.
Okay, so this slide talks about the seasonally adjusted trend, which, you know, for people that study the numbers, this is the trend they want to look at. For people that care about how many people are literally walking the streets looking for jobs right now, this not adjusted number is actually better. It's going to go up in the winter, it's going to go down in the summer, there's going to be those weird seasonal, quite predictable trends. But if our staff, for example, want to know how many more unemployed people might be calling the employment department for services, how many more unemployed people may need food help or whatever it is, this number gives a real picture of what to expect in the winter. And you can see that we were just 2,000 shy on this not seasonally adjusted basis, 2,000 shy of the old record, which was back in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Will we get there next month? I mean, everybody's bet would be yes. I don't have a formal forecast on that, but everybody's bet would be yes. And then on the right, just a couple of little things that we've come up with, and we're in the middle of revising these comments on the right based on yesterday's news release information. But it's looking like we may top out in terms of the number of unemployed around February, because you've got two trends going on. One is the economy is continuing to decline, and the second thing is we always go down in the economy or up in unemployment through about February, and then things start picking up because spring comes and the weather improves and there's more agriculture and so on. So those two downward trends just kind of coincide. The worst comes in February. Now, a month ago, we were saying that the most likely range for the unemployment number of people would be about 180,000, maybe as high as 205,000. And now with yesterday's news release, we need to revisit that and say, okay, there was a much bigger increase than people were expecting in December. Maybe that number gets a little bit worse. So that just kind of gives you an idea, though, of where it may peak because of the seasonal cycle as well as the economic cycle. And to put that early 80s recession in perspective, if we had the unemployment rate now that we had in the early 80s, we'd be looking at about 266,000 unemployed in Oregon, as opposed to the 170 or 180,000. So, again, not saying this is good by any means, but just kind of giving that historical perspective. And again, there's many months left before most people see this turning around, so we can expect more unemployed coming through here. Changing to the employment news, which in a sense is better, you know, it feels more positive to talk about employment, except it's been going down for 8 of the last 10 months. And in the last 3 months, significantly down. The pace of the job losses really increased in the last 3 months. And that's what makes Tom Pitowski's job so difficult, because he's once a quarter, he's getting our numbers. We're saying, here's our best estimate of what's going on. And it's not, in this case, that we changed our numbers. It's just that the following 3 months got a lot worse as we continually fed those numbers. So as you can see, employment down significantly. You can kind of see the turning point where everything turned negative. Private sector's down about 50,000 from its peak before the recession started. I'm not going to talk about every industry, obviously, but I'll hit on some highlights that people have heard a lot about. Construction jobs down about 18,000. Now, if you go back to the early 1990s, when we had roughly 50,000 construction workers, people probably would have thought construction employment of 90,000 was pretty great. That would have been a great goal for Oregon to be working towards. But when it's gone up as much as it did in the 105,000 range, and now we've dropped 18,000, this doesn't feel like a good construction employment level. It feels pretty rotten, because obviously there's 18,000 people that a year and a half ago were working in the industry, and they're not right now. Manufacturing has seen a lot of declines, particularly in durable manufacturing, which is actually at its lowest employment level on record, although the records of a comparable nature only go back to 1990. So, but certainly durable manufacturing includes the wood products industry, includes transportation, so that, you know, you get your rail cars and your trucks and your motorhomes, all of those in that transportation sector, and there's just been a lot of news about layoffs across manufacturing. And so manufacturing is down 21,000 from its peak in 2006, and the graph pretty much speaks for itself. The one comment I'd make on this graph is that in some states, manufacturing really didn't bounce back from the early 90s. It just kept kind of stable or declining even from there. And as you can see, we've actually bounced back twice from two different recessions. Each time, then, we lose jobs in the next recession. And certainly last time, we didn't gain back all those jobs. So it's kind of a long-term downward trend. But Oregon's done better than most states in maintaining at least some kind of manufacturing strength. And certainly the hope is after this recession, we again come back with some manufacturing jobs added back. That's our current projections. Other industries showing some big losses. Retail trade had an awful Christmas holiday season. Normally, we would see, obviously, increases in retail trade employment. In the bad years, typically, we might see increases, but not as much as expected. And this year, we actually saw job losses. So, I mean, when retail trade is losing jobs at Christmas, not even gaining anything close to the normal, then we're in real trouble, and the graph represents that pretty well. And then another one that's really taken a turn is leisure and hospitality. Restaurants, hotels, those kind of things. You know, if more and more people are getting pay cuts, shifts eliminated, or losing their jobs, they're not going to the beach for the weekend. They're not eating in restaurants as much. And so those kind of companies, we just see a steady stream, particularly restaurants, closing just all over the state. And that's reflected in the employment numbers. There's one main bright spot. There's a few industries that are looking relatively stable, but one real bright spot is healthcare. Even there, some hospitals, some healthcare organizations having to cut costs, having some relatively small layoffs so far. But healthcare, clearly, this graph is pretty much unmatched by any other industry in the last year, where it continues going up, and all the components of healthcare are up over the year. So to summarize the recession in one graph, these are the industries that have had significant losses. I've talked about quite a few of them. And in my graphs, red is always bad. So, I mean, that's what we're facing. This is a very significant downturn. And I think you all knew that. But maybe just sharing some of these gives you some added perspective for it. Just looking across at other states, Oregon's unemployment rate right now is the fifth highest in the nation. If you remember, if you were around in the 2001-2003 recession, for about 23 months, we were the number one unemployment rate in the nation, and it just went on and on. We're not there yet. You can see the states above us. Now, obviously, this is November numbers. Most states don't release their December numbers till this coming Friday, so we don't know where we rank in December. We've released ours. Most of theirs will go up, too, I'm sure. So we may be still about fifth. And then in terms of the job losses, we're the eighth worst, if you will, over the year job losses. But on this particular one, every state revises their employment data right about now. And so this one I would take, I mean, the numbers are accurate as they are right now, but every state will revise their employment losses within about 3-4 weeks from now. So we may not be quite as bad looking as we do here. Some states may revise further downwards than what they'd originally estimated. But it does give you a sense. I mean, things are not looking great. And my final graph on the current economy, where do we go from here? This is the state forecast, the last official forecast from the Office of Economic Analysis, which at the time was suggesting we'd bottom out in the third quarter of this year. And I know that Tom brought an update even as recently as Friday, and I think that's, you know, pushing into fourth quarter or even early into 2010. And again, the big change for Tom was that our numbers came in so much more weak for the last 3 months of this year. I mean, nothing that Tom or we did wrong or bad. It's just that's what the survey, all these employment numbers, incidentally, are based on a monthly survey of Oregon businesses. So they, you know, they're very good numbers based on a local sample that we're heavily involved in. So we have a pretty high confidence level in these numbers. But every year we revise them once we get more survey information in. So we're in the middle of that process now. So that's the end of my current situation. Would you like me to take a few questions?
Yeah, I think this would make sense since we're breaking into a new topic here. Senator Przanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Graham, on this one here, based on what I thought I heard you say earlier in your presentation, I thought I heard you say something about unemployment was going to flatten out in February. of 09. Did I hear that wrong?
No, Madam Chair and Senator Brzezinski, that's correct, but that was looking at the not seasonally adjusted numbers. In other words, we know that February is a bad month because not only is the economy struggling, but it's winter and it's snowy and those things. So on the non-seasonally adjusted side, right, we would expect unemployment to peak then. But if we seasonally adjust, which is what this forecast does, then if the job losses continue through 2009, the number of unemployed could keep going up.
Okay.
We could actually see a second peak of actual unemployed people a year from now, February, March of 10, if we continue having a lot of job losses throughout 09.
Okay. Because that's what Tom has shared with us back in December, and it seems like we're still, unfortunately, on that track.
Right. Right. Things have really only got worse since Tom's earlier forecast. And
yes, Senator Mona Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, we're passing this deferred maintenance, or we're trying to get through the system of deferred maintenance, and that will be primarily the construction sector that it's going to address. And you said that there are 18,000 unemployed. So I guess I'm wondering, how will we be able to target those 18,000 that are unemployed into these deferred maintenance jobs? And maybe that's not what you can answer, but can you shed any light on that? Or the chair, can she?
Well, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
I mean, certainly I'm not, I don't have the data here in front of me, but through the Employment Department, we do have good data on unemployment insurance claimants and the industries that they came from. And we do have, in our many offices across the state, we have our employment service side, whose main function, is only function, is to match people with the jobs. So I'm guessing that quite a few of those 18,000 construction workers are right now registered with the Employment Department. So that's one source. It's not the source for every one of them. But there's certainly, our numbers suggest there's 18,000 skilled construction workers who were working in the industry less than a year ago, mm-hmm. or 18 months ago. And if those right jobs come up, you know, there's no training needed there. That's a skilled workforce kind of ready to go.
Follow up. So of those 18,000, do you know where they are located geographically? Are you able to get that data?
Madam Chair and Senator Mona Sanderson, on a broad level, yes. I mean, I don't
a broad level.
Maybe on the individuals,
like
but we do know
the Portland metro area, Eugene, Bend.
For every area of Oregon, we know how many construction jobs have been lost.
Okay.
And so that would kind of translate. And again, each of our offices all across the state right now has construction workers on their books saying, we're ready to work, we need a job. So every, you know, if there's an opening or a project in Bend or in Medford or wherever it is, we've got construction people listed with us already that want to work. And then there's certainly others that probably aren't registered with the Employment Department. I know that our employment service people have been doing a lot of work on this with our workforce partners, kind of looking in how many welders, how many weatherization was one mm-hmm. that they worked on that I saw.
Thank you.
And I did have a question about the retail sector numbers. I know these are seasonally adjusted numbers, but everybody was predicting a really bad holiday season. But then it seemed like on top of that, because of the economy, the weather, I mean, particularly mm-hmm. here mm-hmm. in the Northwest, we got weather that we don't usually get. I think nationally that was probably somewhat true, too. So do you have any idea of whether that happening, coinciding with the holidays, could have made those numbers even worse than they would have been?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm sure it did. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly the timing of that particular winter phase here in Oregon was bad. And if you remember, it was bad across a huge portion of the United States. So that impacted mm-hmm. the national numbers, too. Maybe the problem there, though, is that people probably adjusted either by online shopping, because that was their best option, or, you know, you question how many of them then went out in the middle of January to do all the shopping they would have done. You know, maybe they did some, but would they have done all of it? Because you get in the frenzy right before Christmas. So I don't have any numbers to back that up. That's just thinking about it, being around these numbers all day. So I'm sure it was a double whammy. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's move into the report.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so as I said before, I don't get asked very much these days about the long-term trends because everybody's just, let's survive the recession, you know. And we don't try to predict, unlike Tom, we don't try to predict when the recession will end. I mean, that's his role and that's his expertise. We feed our numbers. We do make projections, though, on the real long-term, the 10-year kind of horizon, mostly for the benefit of students, young people thinking about careers, and also for colleges thinking about programs and training. So I'll share a couple slides of that with you. And then finally, we did some interesting new thinking last year, at least many people seem to think it's interesting, about how to prioritize training when there's scarce resources and we know that there's many, many jobs that need skilled workers. And so I'll share a little bit of that with you too. One thing we did in the spring of last year, now clearly there's a dramatic change in those months since then, but we did our first ever statewide vacancy survey. It was one piece of information we've never really had for Oregon. Just what are the current vacancies? And I'm just sharing one slide out of a 20-slide presentation on this. But we found about 48,000 vacancies spread across the state, across about 500 occupations. And you can see just this snapshot of the top 20, I think this slide is. I think it gives you a great overview of the diversity of Oregon's economy. You know, we hear a lot about healthcare growth in Oregon, and my slide showed you that that's an absolutely true fact. We hear a lot about high-wage jobs. But this graph says, you know what, Oregon is made up of a lot of different jobs. Nurses is number one on this list, so healthcare is represented numerous places. But the very next one is farm workers. You know, a very important part of Oregon's economy that sometimes gets overlooked because it's not kind of the in-cool thing. Nurseries certainly has been growing pretty well, but it's just a very traditional part, and people don't hear about it as much maybe as they do about healthcare and some other things. And then retail sales, you know, not maybe thought of as the most glamorous thing, certainly not the most high-wage thing, but there were lots of openings. And now, again, this was spring of 2008. Would these numbers be different today? Absolutely. They'd be dramatically different, and we are planning another vacancy survey this spring, so it'll be interesting to see how they compare. That number becomes important when I talk about the prioritization in a few minutes, so I just wanted to share that. A couple of other numbers that become very important in that prioritization is that as we look out 10 years, about one-third of the jobs that we'll need to fill with skilled people, in many cases, are because of economic growth. Okay, right now we're in a recession, but if you take the long-term view, Tom, us, pretty much everybody believes that Oregon will get back to a growth pattern. I mean, that's very consistent for the state. But even more than that, by about a 2-to-1 margin, we're going to need a lot of trained workers, not to fill the growth jobs, but to fill what we call replacement openings. And the classic replacement opening is for someone who retires. So if you have a nurse, to go back to the last example, if you have a hospital that used to need 100 nurses and they've expanded and they need 120 nurses, that addition of 20, those are the growth openings. But if in the meantime 40 of the hospital's nurses retired, they need another 40 nurses to fill for the retirements. That's the replacement openings. And replacement's a little broader than that, but that's the big player. And so what you see here, particularly if you look down at things like production workers, construction, maintenance, repair, you see this kind of myth that's been around for 10 or 15 years in Oregon that we don't need blue-collar workers anymore. You see that myth exploded. You know, if you're only thinking about growth, it would be true to say that, well, we're going to need relatively fewer blue-collar workers than maybe some of the healthcare workers, relatively fewer. But if you look at the actual need, because a lot of blue-collar workers are also thinking about retiring, they may have pushed it back a few years after the recession, but they will retire at some point. And maybe the best example is this picture of manufacturing. I know that the governor and the workforce board and many others really believe, and I agree, that we need a viable manufacturing sector in Oregon, something we've always done well at. We've adapted from the days when it was primarily wood products. We're much more diverse. But if you look just at the growth, it's pretty minimal. Our projections, Tom's projections over 10 years. But if you look at those replacement openings, we're going to need a lot of manufacturing workers to keep these companies going. And when I chat with workforce boards or workforce professionals, the point I make is that if Oregon's manufacturing declines because of exports or taxes or highways or infrastructure or many other things, that's a bad thing, but we in the workforce arena can't do much about those. But if manufacturing declines only because the manufacturing businesses couldn't find skilled workers, then we in the workforce arena should be saying, what did we do wrong? You know, why wasn't there the training? Why didn't we prioritize that correctly? Obviously, resources is a huge issue, but that's the kind of message that I try to share with folks in the workforce is this graph says we really need to be communicating that we need a lot of manufacturing workers mostly to fill the gaps left by the retirees in the future. The occupational prioritization for training, there's another whole presentation on this. All you get today is one slide and me talking. But I have kind of a humorous slide in the presentation that says there's a dreaded question that I hate to be asked and my counterparts across the nation hate to be asked. And the question basically is, we want to know the demand and the supply for every occupation in Oregon. You know, so pick any occupation and you know that we'll need 23,000 of those workers in the next 10 years. And then magically come up with the supply number from, you know, graduations and high school completions. And if that number is 21,000, subtract the two numbers. There's the gap. There's your prioritization. It's very simple. And the problem is, on the supply side, it just doesn't work. For something like nurses, it works pretty well because we have very good data on the number of nurses graduating, and most nurse graduates will become nurses. They've invested a lot of time in it. But when you get to general management jobs or retail sales, how do you measure the supply of retail salespeople? It could be anybody in Oregon could go work in retail sales, pretty much anybody anyway. So we've got to get beyond this coming up with these magical supply numbers for all 700 occupations. So what we did last year was put together this kind of new approach where we basically say we'll take the good hard data for everything we can, and then we'll take some softer, squidgier data just for the occupations where it makes sense. And the hard data would be things like the total openings, just like I just showed you, the growth and replacement openings. All other things being equal, the more openings there are, the higher you would think that occupation would be on the prioritization list. The wages, all other things being equal, the higher the wages, the higher on the prioritization list. Another factor was how important is the occupation all across Oregon? The more important it is across many regions of Oregon, the higher it will be on the list than if it's only important in two or three places. There were six of those primary factors that we looked at. Two of them had to do with the vacancy survey that I mentioned. How many vacancies were there for the occupation? And perhaps equally importantly, giving us a different view, how long had the vacancies been vacant before they were filled? Because that's kind of a measure of how difficult it is to find the people. So those were the hard factors. And then we added in these kind of softer factors where the data were available. One of them was the supply data, because as I say, in some occupations, nurses, dental hygienists, some apprenticeships, the data is pretty good, and it makes sense to use it. Another one was immigration. There are some occupations where it may not make sense for Oregon to invest training to train our own workers when statistics show that those kind of people will move anywhere in the world for the right job. And maybe some very high-level engineering type positions would be an example. And I'm not quoting that as a direct example, but just to kind of give you an idea. If you're hiring a nuclear physicist in Portland, your market for finding that person is worldwide. But if you're hiring a welder in Roseburg, your market for finding that welder is probably Douglas County, maybe Lane County. Not many people, welders, are going to move from New York for an opening in Roseburg. You've got to be training your own there. So, and there are census data that actually help us get at that. Then another one that we looked at was the degree to which companies actually are basically putting their actions where their verbal concerns are. In other words, did companies put up money or staff, faculty, or equipment so that a college could put on a new program of training? That would be a sign that the companies themselves are really saying, there's a problem here, we want to invest in the solution. And then finally, we gave kind of a bump up on the list to anything that was on the governor's or the workforce board's priority list in terms of broad industries. That was healthcare, manufacturing, clean technology, and high-wage, high-demand jobs. So those occupations kind of got a nudge up in the prioritization just to reflect the fact that Oregon policymakers said those were important to them. And when we were all done with all of this, and I'll come back to the slide with the links, when we were all done, the top 20 statewide occupations are in front of you, and I won't read them to you. As you can see, it's a pretty good representation of a lot of different kinds of jobs. What we've also done is prepare lists of the top 20 healthcare occupations and the top 20 not healthcare occupations, because healthcare really dominates these kind of prioritizations. The top 20 manufacturing, the top 20 for Region 6, which is Douglas County, the top 20 for every one of Oregon's 15 workforce regions. And Our belief on these is not that they become the kind of list where you say, I only have enough money to go down to number 7, and that's it. We just cut off. I mean, it's not meant to be used that way. The way we would like to recommend it's used is that, let's say this is a state workforce board. You start by looking at registered nurses because it's the number 1, and you think to yourself, well, there's already a lot of activity there. There's already a health board. There's already work being done there. Maybe we can check that one off, and maybe that's for them to decide. Maybe we can check that one off as something that people are already taking care of. Let's look at welders. And then maybe it's a community college, and they think, well, based on the projections, we've already got a welding program. Maybe it's not quite covering the need, but it's close. For now, we'll check that one off. And physicians and surgeons, not many regions are going to put up their own training for that. But you get down to something like maybe plumbers or physical therapists, and maybe there are firefighters is further down the list. Maybe there are some community colleges. Look at that and say, you know what? There's a niche that we could carve out for ourselves, maybe working even in collaboration with 3 other community colleges in the area. And then we encourage people to go talk to the businesses. Sometimes it may look like there's a need, but it's not a training issue. Maybe it's a wage issue. Maybe it's a benefits issue. So we really believe that the workforce policymakers need to talk to businesses and say, it looks like machinists is a high priority for more training. You companies that hire machinists, let's have a conversation here. Do you agree with that? Is that what you're finding? And if they say yes, then machinist becomes one that workforce professionals start investing some real time in, figuring out what is it we need to do different. So the list isn't meant to be just take it and run with it. The list is to say, out of 700 occupations, here's 20 that you might want to start looking at first. And if you've taken care of those, we can give you the next 20, and you can go as deep as you want. So that's the concept. There's a tool on our website where any region, anybody can go in and start doing different sorts and different filters on this. And then we do have a special report online, and the hard copy should be out any day now, actually. So we'll be happy to get copies to you. And that ends the prepared comments I had, so I'll be happy to take questions.
Madam Chair, just real quick.
Yes, please, Senator Mona Sanderson.
I would really like to just have one sector, the construction sector, where those jobs are, where they are.
Right.
Madam
Chair and Senator Mona Sanderson, the jobs that have been lost, is this following up on your earlier
question? I want to know where our unemployed construction workers are in the state.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, obviously, we could probably talk about this all day, and I know you have other places to go. I did, in your last slide, notice reading the fine print that those rankings say that they're from an overall list of 269 high-wage, high-demand occupations. So you're looking at, obviously, jobs where there's going to be a need, but jobs that meet a certain standard.
Madam Chair,
how do you define a high-wage job?
Great catch. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this particular project was for the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, and they made a decision about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, that they would prioritize their training funds that they had towards this concept of high wage, high demand. So the high wage part says that if you line up all of the 700 occupations in Oregon, and you line them up from highest wage to lowest wage, and you find the middle, everything above that is high wage. That's a very broad definition of high wage. But the benefit of that is that it opens it up to a lot of occupations that may need training. The same thing on the demand. If you look at our 10-year projections, growth and replacement, from the occupation with the most need to the least, you take the middle one, everything above that is high demand. And I should have the numbers memorized at this point, but I don't just at this moment. I can easily get them to you. But then, for this purpose, they had to be both. And so as I've shared this, for example, with some community colleges, they've expressed the concern you won't find CNAs on this list. That doesn't mean that we should never invest training in CNAs. It means that they're not a high-wage occupation. Mm-hmm. So again, this list isn't the be-all and end-all of every prioritization discussion. But if you want to invest in jobs that pay high wages and therefore support families and have a good return to the state, these are the kinds of occupations to look at. We've already agreed that when we do this list next time, which is about a year and a couple months from now, we are planning to do it for all 700 occupations, and we'll make the high demand, high wage one of the filters that you can choose to do or choose not to do, as opposed to it being the first cut, which is the way that this project started. So hopefully that helps.
Yes, Senator Pisanski.
Graham, one question based on what you're saying as to some of these, I'm going to call them skilled workers. It seems to me this plays right into maybe the investments should be with apprenticeship-type programs, ones that you can actually maybe use facilities such as community colleges or whatever it may be, or the trades themselves to enhance those type of programs where you're actually going to be investing in people that will be able to be part of that workforce in the future and have high-paying type of jobs available.
Right, Madam Chair and Senator Brzezinski, I'd agree, and we did provide a massive amount, probably more than you wanted, of data to Representative Hovey on yes. apprenticeships.
I was wondering.
October, November last year, and his staff were involved in that. So.
Great.
Yes, Senator George, go ahead.
Sure. Graham, one of the things that this fall, for one of the companies I have, I wanted an office manager, so I put a position on Craigslist, and I got hundreds of resumes from people. And what shocked me was it was a fairly low-skill position that didn't really pay that well, but the overqualified people who applied for that just shocked me. I mean, engineers, MBAs, I mean, it was really amazing to me how overqualified a lot of people were who applied for this job of an office manager. And so is there any way to track people who are, in essence, overtrained for current occupations, or are we overtraining people? Are we misallocating resources by having too many people trained in an area that, I mean, it really was amazing to me how many people were who had high levels of education were applying for jobs that were far below what they were asking for, and they were looking for permanent positions. So I don't know if there's some way to. I mean, I look at this list right here, and I'm like, well, right now I could hire machinists at a dime a dozen. I mean, there's so much supply of unemployed machinists today, but what you're saying is in the future we're going to need more. So it's kind of hard to convince a young person to go to train machinists when right now you couldn't get a job as a machinist in the state. So there's a bunch of series of deeper issues here, especially as we go into a recession. So can you address maybe those two things for me?
Madam Chair and Senator George, so I'll take the current one first. This prioritization certainly does not reflect today's needs in the workplace if we walk out of this building and start looking. I mean, clearly the economy is in a very fairly unique situation for Oregon. This does reflect our best estimate of the 10-year, the long-term trend. And so whether this is right in 8 years or 10 years or 12 years, we do think that Oregon will need machinists and we won't have enough of them long-term because of retirements and so on. Some of today's machinists may work longer because of what's happening right now. As to the overqualified, there are not great measures on that kind of underemployment is another phrase. There are some, and I could certainly dig some numbers and get back to you with a little bit of that. One of the measures is the people that are working part-time that really wish they could be working full-time, and that's something that has gone up, and there's some pretty good national numbers on that. The kind of situation where the PhD is applying for the retail sales or the engineer is applying for the office manager, those are a lot harder to track, but I don't doubt your story at all. And even if you were hiring in October, November, you remember Oregon had lost 35,000 jobs by that point, and a good number of them in some of those, you know, high wage occupations. And people, at least some people, they want a job. I mean, they want, even if it means a substantial wage decrease for now, they'll take that because they want the job. So not disagreeing by any means with what you see. We do still hear, not as much as we used to, but we do still hear of shortage occupations, though. You know, just certain types of specialized skills that people still can't find. You're right, machinists is maybe off the list right now, but there are still shortages, you know, but it's very dramatically different than 18 months ago. So,
Senator Telford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would the absorption rate of the recovery, when we start to get out of this, affect that very much?
Madam Chair and Senator Telfer, probably not. Again, I don't think this would be a useful measure in the next year or two. So, you know, this is the long-term training. You wouldn't probably want to rush out and start training certain kinds of occupations right now. That's the need to go talk to those businesses. Because if machinists is on the list and you go talk to the businesses and they say, you've got to be kidding me, I don't care what the long-term numbers show, and yes, it's a high-wage occupation, I've got more machinists than I could handle, then maybe that one gets put back for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. It's not today's priority. When we do turn around, you know, I think the job growth will be relatively slow, and that's mm-hmm. certainly the kind of what Tom's showing. So it'll take a while to get back to the pre-recession high, let alone to get to the heights of the 10-year projections. We do update the projections every 2 years also, so these don't sit around for 10 years. This is the year where we will update that 10-year, so it'll be 08 to 18. And, of course, then we move forward and we look at what's changed, and quite a few things have. So.
Well, I think that's about as long as we said we'd keep you. So, Graham, thanks very much. There's obviously a lot of food for thought. I think you said that this report will be available pretty soon. Somebody gave me a copy of what looks like the front
online
of it.
Online version, right.
So it is available online
right now. The hard copies, we should be out within.
So if members are interested, we'll get you a copy of the report, and I'm sure we'll be able to have an opportunity to invite you back. But thank you very much for sharing so much information in such a short time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again. Well, members, that concludes our informational meeting, so I will close the informational meeting and return to the top of our agenda, which is our basic organizational meeting. So this obviously is our first meeting. We started by mixing it up a little before we introduced ourselves, but I've actually had an opportunity to meet with each of you individually, and we usually start in these committees by introducing the members through self-introductions, and then we'll also introduce our staff. So I think that I shared with you that what would be kind of fun was, in addition to telling us who you are in terms of your title and where you're from, and perhaps if you have thoughts about our committee's work, what you are interested in, but also if you could tell us a little bit about something interesting about your own employment or job history. So the best or worst job you ever had, or the most interesting job you ever had, which I'm sure is your legislative service. So why don't we just start here with the very talented Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you. I'm Lori Mona Sanderson. I represent Gresham, Trout-Delwood Village, Fairview, which is Senate District 25. And this is the first time on this committee, so this is going to be all new stuff for me. But my parents grew up in the Depression, you know, so growing up with those types of parents, our work ethic, I think, for the four kids in my family was very good. And so I started work at the age of eight in the summer picking berries. And my first year was, it was $100, I remember, as an eight-year-old, and that was huge. And now that was considered child abuse. So we're not able to do that, which I find very sad. Maybe children now, though, in this age would not even consider doing that type of work. But, you know, it's fun because I always worked in the summers and graduated to being a lifeguard, and I taught swimming, and then I was a stewardess for a while. I always was doing these weird jobs until I became a nurse. And that's sort of my history.
Thank you. That's great. Senator Telfer.
I'm the real newbie on the block. A real true freshman, first time in serving the public in the Salem level. I'm just finished 6 years as a Benton City Councilor. I'm a CPA by trade. I own five other businesses, so I dabble in numerous things between plastic fabrication companies and coffee shops. So, but one of my first jobs, I also majored in hotel and restaurant management, and one of my first jobs was sales director of a large hotel in Columbus, Ohio, where I got to become very good friends with Bob Hope and a number of people that came into the hotel a lot, and, you know, always came in the back door. And so I'd say, other than public service, that's probably one of my favorite jobs. Of all the people I met, I had three people came into my office. Actually, it was two of them at the time. Sat on my desk, kind of lounged around my desk, and needed a space for practicing with a piano. And it was actually Peter, Paul, and Mary, and they're trying to get back together. So it was interesting job, full of lots of fun. So, but looking forward to being on this side of the mountains, I represent District 27, which is Central Oregon, and I've been told that, you know, we in Central Oregon have 300 days of sunshine, and that it rains all the time in Salem, and I haven't seen a drop of rain yet since I've been there, and I was home last weekend, and it was fogged in and cold and miserable, so looking forward to the next few months.
Great, and we're glad you're here, and also I'm very glad that you'll be serving as vice chair of our committee. And why don't we go to Senator Przanski?
Thanks. I represent District 4. District 4 includes a good portion of Lane and Douglas counties, and I have, let's say, parts of Eugene, including the University of Oregon as their facilities area, and then some smaller communities and areas, both on the Cascade west sides of Lane and Douglas County. And that district actually takes in parts of northern Douglas County as well as southern Lane County. This is my third session as being on Commerce, and I actually had the opportunity to chair the committee the past two sessions and really enjoyed that and really pleased that the President is allowing me to serve here again. Jobs. It's quite interesting that Lori kind of gave her experience with family jobs. That's probably was my worst experience, but also some of the most meaningful, instructive working for relatives. The worst part of that, I remember being quite young and planting a yard with and being out, this is in Texas where I was raised, and had to first cut the sod up in small pieces, dig the hole, put it in there, and then of course you have to let it water, and I was told that it never really took hold and they had to redo it, but I'm not sure about that. Fire restoration for the same uncle, and roofing, as you can imagine in Texas, roofing is like you get up there in the morning as early as you could, you take about a 4 or 5 hour break in the middle of the day, and then you can go out there and you work the late afternoon, early evening. My day job now is a prosecutor. I've had the opportunity to serve as a prosecutor for over 20 years. I'm limited now to doing municipal prosecution since I am serving the legislature. I couldn't stay in the district attorney's office, but I've enjoyed that and working with victims of crime as well as just being in the position to serve in that capacity. And legislative work, I love it. I feel very fortunate that I've had the opportunity to serve over the years with the 7 years in the House and 5 years here in the Senate.
Great. Well, we're glad to have you. And Senator George.
I'm Larry George. By trade, I'm a food processor. Talking about family jobs, many of you know former Senator Gary George, who is my father, grew up on a farm. I can think of about 10 jobs that he gave me. But I remember when he used to run out of things for us to do, we had an old county road that went through a field that had been abandoned about 60 years ago, and my job was to stand out there with a truck and throw rocks in the back, just picking rocks out of the field. I don't know how many hours I did that, but it kept us out of trouble, I suppose.
Built character, huh?
Exactly. Not exactly sure why we did it, but it's appeared that we moved rocks from this place and put it over there, but it did get us out of trouble. The oddest job I had was for 27 days. I was a used car salesman in San Jose, California. Learned a lot about how different people negotiate. It was a most enlightening, but also disturbing experience as far as dealing with management. Probably the funniest job I had was that I was a tomato inspector on a platform out in the middle of San Joaquin Valley, inspecting thousands of truckloads of tomatoes that eventually ended up in your ketchup. So. Those are some of the things that that I remember in my different occupations. As far as this committee goes, I'm looking forward to it. As an employer, and I've talked to some of you about some of the recent experiences we've had. As an employer, you see a lot of situations, both not only have a people lack of training, but also then what do you do when economic conditions force you to lay people off? It's one of the hardest things I think that we face as employers, and it's going to be, I think, interesting to see how we deal with some of those issues. I know at the first of the year, we ended up laying off a number of really wonderful people, and the real impact in their lives is a really tough thing to see. So going to this jobs environment, it's going to be, this is a real honor to serve on this committee, so I appreciate the opportunity.
Great. Well, we're glad to have you. And I will tell you a little bit about myself. So I'm Diane Rosenbaum. I am new to the Senate. I'm the freshman, as just like Senator Telfer, except that I spent 10 years over on the other side of the building in the House. I represent District 21, which is southeast and northeast Portland, and a little of Clackamas County, Milwaukee, is in my district too. So I, and I have actually served on the equivalent of this committee a couple of times on the House side. Most recently, last session, it was called the Business and Labor Committee, which is chaired by Mike Schaffler and still is. And then in, I think, 2001, I was the vice chair of the committee when Representative Tim Knope from Bend was chairing Business and Labor. So it's a passion of mine, workforce issues and labor issues and economic development. My own work experience is kind of checkered. I was thinking back to the first real job I ever had after high school. I was going to college in the fall, and so it was really hard to get hired for any permanent jobs, which I applied for and didn't get any of. So I finally got hired by Life Magazine to sell Life magazine subscriptions over the telephone, which I wasn't very good at. Actually, I didn't sell enough, and it's the only job that I don't think they used the word fired, but they sort of said, maybe another line of work would be better for you. So, and then as an English major in college, I didn't have a lot of marketable skills, but I did work in the post office. I worked at Meyer and Frank's here in Portland while I was in college. And after college, I actually did a variety of things. So I spent a couple of years working in a drug treatment program, a halfway house for heroin addicts. I was the manager of a women's health care clinic, and then actually went to work at what used to be called the phone company. Back in the old days when there was only one phone company, started as a telephone operator, and then did just about every job in the non-management side that there was. So I had a job as what's called consumer appeals, people who couldn't get their phones hooked up and were just so cranky, and we were sort of the last point of contact. And then ended up actually in a job I never thought I would be able to do, but a technical job, wearing a tool belt, climbing ladders, soldering telephone wires when we actually still wired people's telephones physically, and then actually spent about 25 years doing that kind of work, finally ending up sort of in the highest paid non-management job, wiring complicated telephone systems, PBX systems for big business customers and hospitals. And along the way, I got involved in my union, which represented the people that worked there, so the Communications Workers of America. And that's really how I got involved in public policy and politics, was seeing the connection between what was happening to people on the job where I was and what was going on down here in Salem. So that's my story. I think this committee has really an important task this session. We obviously, in the presentation, we heard just what dire straits we're in terms of rising unemployment. But I also think, and it's reflected in the comments of the committee members, that we have some tremendous opportunities to think through how we can help people get through these bad times and also prepare them for the future, and think about what jobs are going to be out there that we may be able to help people. And also look at the business climate, look at the working conditions, and I'm sure those issues will all come before us. So I'm very excited and happy to have such a capable and talented group of committee members. And we also have two staff people who are new to the building, our committee administrator, Jeremy Sarant, and I think he'll introduce himself, and then our committee assistant, Pam Marshall, does not have a microphone, I believe, over there. So I'm sure she'll have plenty to say later, but we'll let Jeremy introduce Pam, too.
I'm Jeremy Sarant. I have a few more days' experience in this building than Senator Telfer because we started with training a week ahead of time. But
then you're my go-to person.
New to the building and new to the job and looking forward to it. I've had a lot of jobs in the past, including practicing law, mostly concentrating in employment areas for about 15 years. But Senator Przanski, you mentioned roofing, and the first summer I was in Oregon, it was the first week in August, and I got a manpower temporary job for a week. doing a hot tar roofing job in the first week of August. And it's a source of enormous pride to me because five of us went on the job the first day, and I was the only one who showed up for work the second day. So I've always put that as a feather in my cap.
Glutton for punishment.
Yeah. Pam had long experience as an administrative assistant in the Medford area and has moved up to Salem in the last year, and I guess didn't want to sit around home doing nothing, so came to work here.
Great. Well, welcome to our capable staff as well. I think we really only have one more item of business today, and that would be adoption of our committee rules. Members, you should have in front of you the committee rules for the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development. You have probably seen these in your other committees. They are kind of the generic rules that lay out what a quorum is, what notice needs to be served, and basically how we will entertain motions, hear bills, and do our business here. I don't think there's anything unusual. I guess I'm going to remind myself that a quorum of this committee is three members, so anytime any three of us gather, if we are discussing matters before the committee, we've actually then constituted a quorum, and we have to be mindful of the requirement that we do that in public. Other than that, I don't think there's anything unusual. Are there any questions about the rules, or is there a motion? Senator Telfer, perhaps?
I would move that we adopt the committee rules as presented before us.
Senator Telfer moves that we adopt the committee rules. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And members will be meeting at 3 o'clock on Mondays and Wednesdays. I anticipate we'll probably fill the time allotted to us, and because it's the last slot in the day, we may occasionally run right up until 5 o'clock, so if that's a conflict or problem for anybody, please let me know. I think we'll be trying to get to work. We don't have a lot of bills that have been referred to us, but I think we've got a handful now that look like those that we could actually start to work. We'll probably have a couple more informational hearings. We have had requests both from the Workers' Comp Division and from the Bureau of Labor and Industry. And if you have ideas for background hearings or informational materials that you'd like to see, please share that with me or with Jeremy. And other than that, I think we have completed our business for today. So with nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned.
Perfect timing.